We're glad you're joining us here at NRCC Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts.
Thanks, Doug. Thank you all. Does that work? Okay, it's kind of hard to hear. So I was joking earlier that this is dressed up for me. So and my wife was like, boy, you're dressed up. And so we came down here, and I really wanted coffee. And so we found ourselves in the Bojangles line this morning. And I thought, boy, it doesn't get more southern than this. I'm going to speak in nice clothes at a church in a southern capital, and I'm getting Bojangles. I used to get some flack at work for being a quote-unquote Yankee, and I used to remind them that Maryland, where I'm from, is actually below the Mason-Dixon line. And Ralph, one of my coworkers, used to remind me, he said, Chris, my Mason-Dixon line runs right north of Clayton, North Carolina. So anything above that is northern to me. So you're a Yankee. So anyway, thank you. I am going to talk today about the reflection process, and it's one that Doug, like he said, has been doing for years, but he's opened it up recently to some other folks, including me, and I've really found it extremely beneficial. We have several practices here. We have meditation. We have examine, which we did this morning. We have the worksheets. And some of those work great for me. Meditation is one thing that I've really struggled with. I used to set my alarm and go down in the morning, and that lasted about 2 days. And so sitting still and reflecting on spiritual things is pretty hard. But I do like to write, and for me, I've always learned by doing. I've always learned by either teaching or writing stuff down. So today I'm actually going to walk you through the process that Doug developed that I've been using. It's good for me because, I like to write, but it's also been extremely beneficial for me because it's made me confront some things in text that I normally wouldn't do in my everyday life. So I hope you enjoy it. So we are actually going to do a writing exercise today, so I can see the applause building already, the joy in your faces. So we're going to take some time to do that. I'll walk you through. We'll do a small passage. But we're going to use some technology. I'm between generations. I still have paper, and I've got smartphones, and I've got pens. And we're also going to do some cross-generational things today. But I hope you find it a worthy exercise to do. So before we do anything, I'd like you to, if you have a smartphone or a tablet, anything beyond a flip phone would do. But if you could open up a browser. If not, if you're more old-fashioned, a pen and paper in front of you, or any old technology would do, but some way you're going to reflect on the text. And this program meant to, Angie Scioli used this in the teen classroom a few months back, and I loved it because it was pretty cool, and two, it's an instant way to interact and for you all to have a voice. We're going to project your things anonymously up here. We'll do a sampling of them later. So if you could go to that menti.com, www.menti.com, and then just kind of pause there. And Menti actually is a great way of doing some surveys and some other interactive things. So the first question, and I'm going to open up the poll, the first question is, what do you see in this picture? And this is one to sort of just get you used to the technology here. Let me go back. And I believe you should enter that code there, 607904, 607904. If you could enter that into the enterable space there, you should be able to then see a place to enter some text. So the question is, what do you see on the screen there? If you could enter in, you could enter in more than one thing. I think there's three slots. And one thing I did not do is I did not enable the profanity filter. So if you keep it above board, please. So what do you see there? And you can enter in the text and then hit enter. I can see we've got 29 or 20 responses now. 28, so a number of them coming in. So you can see here they're coming in specks, small pebbles, sesame seeds, fingerprints, crumbs, specks, some sort of vomit face up there. I don't know what that emoji is. So that's the technology. We're actually going to use that in just a bit. When you do a reflection, we're actually going to use this. There's a longer form, allows you to do more than just a couple words, but we're going to use that in just a minute to show some of your reflections at the end of our brief lesson here. Okay, so you know, writing is a lot like exercise in some ways, and I love this quote from Dorothy Parker, who is a writer, a famous writer. She said, "I hate writing, but I love having written." And that's kind of how I felt about running for years. I never wanted to run, but I was always happy when I had done it, and I felt good about it. And I think writing is one of those things. Not many people love to write. Even if you look at, if you Google writer quotes, a lot of times you'll see quotes about, like, "I didn't like writing, I was just compelled to write," or "I just needed to write." And so even the writers, some of the more famous writers in history, it's not something that they you know, enjoy or it comes easy to them. It really is, if you think about it, an unnatural thing, trying to cram experience into these black and white symbols and figures on a page. So if you're feeling a little bit of apprehension about writing, don't sweat it, because even the most professional and famous of writers have struggled with it in the past. So just a quick sanity check there on it. But one thing I would say is we're going to talk about biblical texts, and we're going to look at one today. And I don't do a whole lot of Bible reading anymore. I mean, I guess I've gone through phases. Certainly when I was in high school and I had to. I went to a Catholic high school in Maryland. I did a lot more of that because I had to. But then from time to time in my life, I've picked it up. Read it several times for maybe a few months, read through the Gospels, and then it sat on my bedstand for months and months and months and years after that. So this exercise has really gotten me back into opening the Bible and looking at it. But one thing I know, when I read anything, my mind starts to wander a lot of times. And I'll read a page, and I'll be flipping the page, and I'll realize I have no idea what I just read. And then I spend about 10 minutes on the next page thinking, should I go back? I should really go back. And all of a sudden, I'm two pages in. I'm still debating internally, should I go back and read and actually pick it up? So for me, a lot of times reading is sort of a passive thing, right? I can read a passage. A lot of times someone will say, "What did it mean?" I'll be like, "I don't know. Let me flip back and see." And kids that I used to teach high school English and also creative writing. And I think kids and also students of all ages really, you know, that's not unusual. A lot of people have that same reaction to reading. We can kind of spend time on it, but we're not actually absorbed in it. And so when I taught high school, a lot of times I would teach, we learned to teach something called active reading. And kids despised it because active reading actually meant they had to have a book and they had to have a journal next to them. And so as they read Act One of whatever play, they actually had to have a journal where they're asking questions, they're writing down words that they didn't know, they're interacting with things they liked, things they didn't like. And so it becomes this active thing. I'm actually engaging in it. And that's really what this process is like. We are going to look at a Bible passage, and this is what I've been doing in Doug's reflection process, and now in our reflection process, is going through a passage and actively engaging, asking questions. What do I believe? What do I not believe? Does this make sense? How does this battle imagery, for example, have anything to do with my life as I drive on 540 every day? So I'd say that, this is an active, what we're going to do in the reflection process is really an active learning process or an active reading process. And so don't worry if it's not your thing. It's not a lot of our things. And one thing, this is a quote I like from a gentleman who wrote a book called Writing to Learn. It's a way, writing about something is a way to make it our own and to sort of delve into it and journey into it. And he said, writing enables us to find out what we know, okay? And if you've grown up in a biblical background or in a church background, maybe you think, I know these biblical passages. I know parables left and right. I know the four gospels left and right. And so, what do I know? Well, actually sitting down sometimes, I'm confronted with things that I thought I knew or thought I believed, and now I'm really confronted with it. And also things that we want to learn about. So The writing process doesn't allow us the luxury of sitting back and being passive. We really have to get involved with the text. Another reason, and I love Flannery O'Connor's writing, she said, "I write to discover what I know." And that's what I found in doing these reflections. Yes, I'm learning about the text. Yes, I'm learning about what Jesus said or what the disciples said. But I'm also delving into what I believe about those words. And so it really is a way of not only learning myself about the text, but also learning something about myself and challenging those beliefs. So that's to give you some, I guess, academic context for what we're about to do and what we've been doing. It is a practice that, you know, that we teach in schools. But to give you some context in terms of, the Christian context, this comes from a Jesuit site, IgnatianSpirituality.com, and it talks about two ways that, two meditative ways that Jesuits in particular engage in texts. And so just to give you an idea that this isn't, we're not too far out on a limb here when we're doing these things at NRCC. So the first way described on the website is something called Lectio Divina, which you can see comes from the early monastic period. It can be done individually or in groups, and we're going to do a group activity today. It involves reading a passage, and we're going to do that. And it also then involves pulling things out of that passage that touch us spiritually or touch us personally. Sitting with it for a little bit of time. We're a little bit time constrained today, so we can't sit too long with it, but we are going to give you a little bit of time to reflect on it and then to read the passage again. Okay, so that's the Lectio Divina process. The other process described on the website is something called spiritual contemplation, and this stems back, traces its roots back to Loyola, Ignatius Loyola, in which he said, let's read the passage two times, and we're going to read two versions of it a couple times. And then it's closing your eyes, giving the passage time to sort of sit with you, and then trying to picture yourself personally in the passage. Who is there in the passage? What images do you see? Besides visual things, are there things you feel, touch, smell, sort of appeal to those other senses? So trying to picture what the scene looks like and putting yourself in it or as a spectator in it. And then what are the emotions in the passage and what are you feeling? So that's really, we talked about the school context. This is really kind of a Christian context or historical context in which people are personally engaging with texts. And that's what we're going to try now. So our process that we have been working with is really this. We select, according to the lectionary, we select texts. And just to show you, peek behind the curtain, the nuts and bolts. We do a lot of web-based communication, so we've got Google Keep and things. So the worship team will actually pick up lectionary texts and post those. And then once they're selected, it's great, you know, and sometimes it's kind of difficult because that passage is staring you in the face. I'll give you an example. The one passage a couple weeks back was actually a psalm. I think it was Psalm 118, and it talks about God in a very, very much a sort of a warrior king sort of mentality. You know, sort of an Old Testament God that has led us to victory, and so the writer can hear the songs and the singing from the warrior's tents. And now Chris write about that, and so it really makes you have to sort of look at that construct of God as this warrior king, this warrior mentality, and say, how do I deal with that? Like, what is that God like in my life? And so in my reflection on that, in speaking about what struggles I've had, what battles have I fought, what victory might I look for, I look back at really my chief struggle throughout my life is trying to earn, right? You know, this blue-collar mentality I was brought up with, you've got to earn your living, you've got to earn your place, you've got to earn, in some case, your grace. It's really sort of a blessing and a curse, I guess, because it makes me want to achieve, but it has its limits, right? For me, in my life, it started to sort of have physical impacts on me. I started to have pinched nerves because I was working so much. And then we had this big tornado that hit Sanford, North Carolina, and then sort of came right up Capitol Boulevard, and literally houses were falling out of the sky into Raleigh and almost hit my daughter in the backyard, a big chunk of it, like this 4x8 sheet of metal. And so, you know, here I am trying to build up this life where everything's safe, and, life isn't safe. And so then, you know, how do I deal with that false self that said, earn, 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 and you'll be safe? That's really, when I look at that passage about the warrior God, that's the battle in my life. And so the reflection I wrote on that was about my desire to sort of insulate and protect myself by building up this life, which is great until it's not great, until it starts to impact you. So number one is big, because a lot of times it's not a text that's easy, okay? The second thing is, we actually look at two different versions, the English Standard Version and the MSG version, and we're going to do that today with our text. And then it's really a really personal exercise in which you imagine, for example, that the Holy Spirit is part of you, that there's a component of spirituality in you that's looking at these things, that God is in you as much as he's outside of you, and that's something, you know, that we stress here quite a bit. We try to look past the literal image and ponder really the figurative side of things like metaphors and similes. Yes, it's a literal foundation. Yes, it's a literal stone, a cornerstone. But what does that mean? What does that mean to Chris Thompson or Paul Wentworth when you're driving on 40 and traffic is backed up, or when you're struggling with something? So we look past the literal and ponder the figurative side of things. And then I would say, look at each of the different images. Sometimes we'll focus on one aspect of a parable or one thing, but take a look around that scene. If you were painting it, what else? You know, you have those great Renaissance paintings where there's a battle clash, and there's always that little funky dog in the corner that, you know, it's like, you know. So I would say, look around the scene, look around the painting, and see what else is in there, because it might resonate with you. And then consider, really personally, how does this passage impact you or have some meaning towards you in your life or for your people? And those people could be family, friends, folks around you. And then write down a reflection on it. Now, I'm not asking, and we're not asking you to write a sonnet, okay? We're not asking. I rhymed in the thing today. I normally don't rhyme. My wife cringed when it rhymed. So we're not asking for, like, art, you know. We're just asking for your thoughts on paper, okay? And this is something I said earlier. It's something that I've even thought, you know, maybe I'm spending too much time on the artfulness stuff, and I need to spend more time on just the Chris Thompson thinking about reflection stuff. So even for me, I think I could use this advice. Just sit down and write your reflection on the passage. So this is the passage, and I'll read it a couple times. You can see the two different versions. And I guess more famously, this is the parable of the mustard seed from the English Standard Version. It goes like this. He put another parable before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches." He put another parable before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches." And then from the Message, another story. God's kingdom is like a pine nut that a farmer plants. It is quite small as seeds go, but in the course of years it grows into a huge pine tree, and eagles build nests in it. God's kingdom is like a pine nut that a farmer plants. It is quite small as seeds go, but in the course of years it grows into a huge pine tree, and eagles build nests in it. So I'm going to enable the next input on this Menti. And what I'd like you to do, I'm going to then flip back, and we'll project those two passages up there. Okay, that should have done it. So what I'd like you to do is go through that process. Spend a few minutes. We'll take about 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes. I know we're, you know, we talk about taking time out, but we're in a big crowd here. So spend a few minutes and jot down some thoughts that come to you about the scene, anything that touches you personally, touches maybe your week, touches something about your relationship in the spiritual side or maybe with others. But I'll give you a few minutes to either in Menti, which you have, or on a pen and paper to reflect on this. So I'm going to pull up on the screen and do a selection of your responses. While we do that, if you so we're going to kind of meld a few things together here. We're kind of going to do the passage reading, what are you thinking, and also the tithes and offerings in one sort of blah. Okay? I'll turn it over to Doug, and I'll pull these up.
Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. And as you're doing that, let me tell you a story that, as I've been doing, that somebody told me. It was a man in our community recently. He said this, you know, I grew up in a traditional kind of heavy-handed version of church. Everybody knew what to believe and what not to believe. Everybody knew how to behave and not to behave, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't believe it all. I couldn't behave at all. And since my personality is conflict avoidant, he said, I just went along with it. And the cognitive dissonance that created for me, he said, was often unbearable. And I would have given up because, he said, I'm a grown-up, but my wife, she wanted to go to church. So I came up with a plan, and my plan was I would go to church, I would just turn off my brain, and maybe I could make some friends. He said, that's what I thought I would do, and then she hauled me here. And when I got here, I said, now, here's what's crazy. I had questions and doubts, and you all let me have those questions and doubts. And here's what's even crazier. Your questions and doubts were even bigger than my questions and doubts. And he said, so I felt permission to start deconstructing my religion. And now, he said, it's been long enough. I've begun to reconstruct. And what I've found is that I've got a religious life that is actually working for me. It is transformative in my life. And that happened. And it happens. That kind of thing happens all the time in our community, which is why I say all the time, this is a good place to invest your time and your energy and your dollars, the dollars that it takes to take an ownership stake in the community life. And so I hope you will. You can go to our website. You can push donate. You can use the QR code in the seat back in front of you. You can use the tablet to set up a giving profile. Once you do that, it's easy and versatile. Or if you use paper, you can drop it in the box in the back. That being said, what are you thinking about?
So let's read a few, okay? We don't have time for 43, but what I thought I would do, this program allows you to download these as PDFs, so what I'll do is I'll post these to the network so you can see kind of what other folks are thinking and also what the earlier folks thought as well. But let's look at a few. One person said, small, it's how all truly important stuff starts. Okay, and I immediately thought to small and doable, the quote
here
that
now small, doable.
Here now small doable, which actually was a response. Okay, so we're not totally crazy when we're talking about those. The smallest inputs can yield enormous life, yield enormous and life giving outputs. Okay, how big is the kingdom now? This was written a long time ago. That's an awesome kind of question, because. Boy, you know, is that the kingdom or is it my kingdom? So that opens up a whole other discussion. Yeah. Some of these trees were planted long ago. My tree, not so much. But don't give up. Spiritual power fools you. It doesn't look like you think power looks. I love that because so much of Christianity, you know, is really kind of 180 degrees from the rest of the world thinking. You know, power is really humility and vice versa. And so I love that. Spiritual power fools you. It doesn't look like earthly power does. Here now, small, doable. I wonder who wrote that. Was that a...
It was not. But it's good.
Mind blown. I love that. So why the Bible? That's a great question. Doug, do you want to handle that, or do you want me to take a stab at it?
No, I'll do it. I mean, I think here's the thing. The problem with why the Bible is, why keep doing this thing that is so painful? Why do this thing that seems so unuseful, unvaluable, filled with so much crazy? Why keep putting ourselves through this? And I think it kind of comes down to how you define the Bible. And I grew up in a world in which the Bible was God's word to me, God's word to us. And as long as you think it is God's word to us, when you run into God bash their infant children's heads on a stone, my enemies, when you run into that, you don't know what to do with it because this is God's word. And I think the starting place for rethinking the Bible and making it useful and a valuable tool for us
is coming to a clearer understanding of what the Bible is. And for that, you kind of have to come to what the Bible is not. The Bible is the record of a bunch of people, just as imperfect as we are, grappling through the spiritual journey and getting it wrong as often as they got it right. But like the tide that comes in over time, sometimes it was awful. The tide was going out. Sometimes it was wonderful. But the tide inevitably moves us in a trajectory, and this is a record of that trajectory moving us closer and closer. And so why the Bible really does come down to, yeah, there's treasure in there, but we can't access that treasure if we keep thinking of the Bible the way that I was raised thinking of the Bible. And, by the way, I wrote 2 chapters in a book on this, so we could read that later.
All right. The impact of the smallest event can be enormous. And then there's one more I think I wanted to... We'll end with this one. I feel very small and insignificant, but sometimes I wonder what would have been different in this world if I had not been in it.
Oh, that's a great one.
Boy, that is great. So, you know, just from the parable of the mustard seed, which, hey, we knew that, didn't we? Just from that, I think you're seeing that there's some reactions, emotional reactions, mind blown, you know. There are some questions that come up, like why are we even, why this text and not another text? But really then we're starting to get into some personal questions about our true value and our true worth just from reading the parable. So with that, I want to turn things over to just sort of a what are you thinking? Did you like the process, not like the process? Do you think you might use it in the future? Is this just whatever, I'm done, you know, I passed this test and I move on? So just thoughts, if you would. Yes, Sheree.
I personally love this. I'm really excited. Like, I really want to do
it. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, northraleighcommunitychurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page on your computer's browser, at the bottom on your phone's browser. Thank you.